Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Baymon Reviews second episode, where we have three brilliant, amazing young women joining us. Not one guest, but three guests, guys. So I'm Haya. I'm your host for this week's episode, where we're going to tackle balancing work and social life. Obviously, there's a fine line between the two, and Annabelle, Zina, and Sara will help us realize what this fine line is all about. So, Annabelle Ghanem, how are you?
Hi, Haya. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. So, Annabelle, can you please introduce yourself? The floor is yours. Before you do, I just want the audience to know that you're our acting Secretary General for this year's conference. So, yeah, go ahead. Now you can build on like what projects you have in your life and the reason why you're here as our guest in the first place.
For sure. For sure. Thank you so much for your introduction, Haya. So, hi everyone, my name is Annabelle Ghanem, and I am the Acting Secretary General for Baymon 2021, like Haya mentioned. Mm-hmm. I am also an AUB student, double majoring in both political science and education, with a double minor in international law and human rights and transitional justice. In my professional life, I work at the Phoenix Daily in multiple positions. The Phoenix Daily is a newspaper based in Lebanon. I am a writer, the chief of the internship program, part of the human resources team, and a member of the editorial team. I'm also a rather prominent participant within the MUN community, with upcoming conferences based in the UK, Pakistan, France, and Italy coming up and lined up for me. So that's very exciting. I've also worked with several nonprofit organizations, all of whom have strong and concrete goals that kind of are revolving around promoting human rights, freedom of speech, policy analysis, and above all, educating our world about their surroundings, which is honestly my lifetime goal and what I always strive to do, even in my daily life, try to educate the people around me, try to voice for the voiceless. And in my non-work life, I also very much enjoy football, art, and traveling.
That's amazing, Annabelle. Thank you so much for that beautiful introduction about yourself. And you literally just justified why you're our guest for this week's episode. Now let's jump on to Zina Yassin. She's our director of PR for this year's conference. So Zina, I'm going to leave the floor to you and allow you to tell us a bit about what projects you take on in your social and personal life.
Thank you, Haya. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. My name is Zina Yassin. I'm a double major student in two distinct universities, studying political sciences along with a minor in international law, transitional justice, citizenship, and the public sector at the American University of Beirut, while also pursuing a Bachelor of Law at Beirut Arab University. I'm involved in various communities like the Rotary Act movement, recently serving as a secretary of Rotary Act to Beirut, and a writer in Rotary Act Mediterranean. I'm also involved in various MUNs, and we have a conference coming up soon that is based in the UK alongside Annabelle, chairing the UNDP committee, as well as a research interviewer in many institutions, one of which is the Asfali Institute of Civil Society and Citizenship. I'm also the president of the PSPA Society at AUB and recently assigned as the Human Rights Ambassador at the Faculty of Law. I believe in anything that has the ability to empower young activists, community leaders, and students who are dedicated towards an inclusive and harmonious society for the youth of tomorrow. And I believe that through being part in many, many activities and projects in that sense, you can be able to accomplish anything that you want in that sense.
That's brilliant, Zina. Thank you so much for that. Again, a justification of why you are our prestigious guest for this week. And finally, we have Sara, our third and final guest, Sara Al-Abid, who joined us last week as well. Sara, the floor is yours. I'm sure you have a lot of things you want to say as well. So here you go.
Thank you, Haya. And it's been a pleasure to be working with these wonderful women, all three of you. I've had the privilege of being close with them professionally as well as personally, which I think we'll get into later on. But first and foremost, I'm a science, both alongside Annabelle and Zina. Next year go into my graduate studies in public international law, conflict, peace, and security studies. When it comes to my professional life, I'm editor-in-chief at the Phoenix Daily, local newspaper. I'm also serving this year, of course, as Director General of Baymon 2021. It's been an honor to be chairwoman of Baymon year and year again for the past couple of years. And it's a big honor for me always to be part of this incredible institution. When it comes to my other Mod United Nations experiences, I've been doing this for almost a decade. Since 2018, I've chaired over 25 conferences. And this year, I've really tried to make a stride to providing my expertise on Model UN conferences in as much of a worldwide virtual way as possible, right? So I've chaired as well for IYA Model United Nations, which, like Annabelle said earlier, is based in the UK. I was the head of academics in an upcoming conference. I'll be the chair of the DISEC committee. I've also participated in other conferences in Pakistan and France and some other of the African member states over this past year. When it comes to more of my professional outside of Model UN, I've been interning here and there to try to really grasp what my field looks like. I've interned at the Lebanese Parliament. I've interned at Wolf Legal Publishers in the Netherlands, as well as currently I'm in an upcoming internship at the Happiness Research Institute, which I'm very excited for. Like Zina said herself, it's been a pleasure to really try to see what the field looks like of politics and citizenship and where we can contribute to that so that we really leave an impact with all the work that we do, and we really encourage and motivate all those around us to take their part.
Okay, thank you so much, Sado. So I'm sure that after 6 minutes of listing the incredible accomplishments you've all made over the last few years and what projects you're currently taking on, our listeners want to know how you manage it all, how you do it all. So, and especially myself, that's the reason why I wanted to record this episode to begin with. So before we jump into what it truly takes to balance all of these projects with your academics and your social lives, there are people out there who don't who are like probably scared to take, you know, the first leap into these types of projects, and they don't know how, they don't know what kind of resources they can take advantage of to research such opportunities. So what is some advice that you've heard over the last few years, probably as well that you've accumulated from your own experiences, that you would give to young women and men who want to get into these kinds of projects, whether it's MUN related or non-MUN related? So Annabelle, if you'd like to shed some light on that, or if anyone else wants to intervene.
For sure. I think that the best advice that I could give anyone is never forget why you want to do what you want to do. So it's very easy, especially in the MUN world and within the professional realm, to get kind of wrapped up between all of the success or the awards or all of those accomplishments that you end up doing. But once you get wrapped up by that, you end up losing sight of why you're doing what you're doing in the first place. And I think this is where people mostly go wrong, honestly. Because once you have that initiative that you want to help people, you want to become an influential person in your society in order to educate, to change, to instigate a sort of sense of, you could say, responsibility within people to for a better world, to be more involved, civic engagement. Once you have those clear goals and you always set your actions according to those goals, you will 100% make it because your morals are right. In terms of kind of finding opportunities, I really, really believe in the term that Google is your best friend. You would be so shocked at the amount of searching that you could do that would kind of facilitate your path into finding what you really like. And on top of that, with all honesty, if someone doesn't know where to go or what they like in general or what to search for, that's okay. You know, sometimes the things that come unexpectedly end up being the things that teach you the most. And that's something that I learned.
Exactly.
Yeah, genuinely. Yeah. And it's a real growing process. I never thought that I would reach where I've reached now. If you asked me in high school, I would never, ever have pictured this. It was really an accumulation of me walking through, searching, wanting to make a difference and seeing the opportunities in front of me and grabbing them as fast as I can.
That's amazing. And I agree with everything you said, especially the idea of having, you know, an end goal and wanting to work towards that and finding whatever matches that goal in order for you to eventually achieve
it. Definitely.
Zina, do you want to add any advice? Because I'm sure that maybe from your Rotaract experiences and your MUN experiences,
definitely. Yeah. Well, my first advice with that would be to never limit yourself. You do not know your limits until you kind of test it all. So I have a lot of people coming up asking, how do you do this? How do you manage this? And all the sentences that I hear, I would never be able to do that. And you don't know. You don't know. You don't know because you haven't put yourself in that position. So always, always stop limiting yourself in that sense and give yourself a chance. And if you fail at it, that's fine. At least you're getting to know yourself better. In terms of the opportunities, especially when it comes to Rotary Act, always find one opportunity. This is my best advice on this. Always find one opportunity that you are passionate about. And this opportunity would open up so many other doors. I'm going to give you an example. I went into Interact. Okay. I was 16 years old. If it wasn't for Interact, I would have never known Rotaract. If it wasn't for Rotaract, I would have never went to UN headquarters in New York and participated in an MUN there, which would never have gave me the chance to meet amazing people in New York, which are now... people responsible for IYAMUN that me, Sara, and Annabelle are part of. And imagine something, a decision that I took when I was 16 years old is still opening up opportunities for me till this second. Wow. And this is why you should never limit yourself in that sense and always take one opportunity and take catch of it. Take catch of it in all everything that you can.
I love that. Sara, do you want to add anything before we jump to the next idea?
I'll add a small note, which is that I think what you said, Haya, is very important. What do you do when you're feeling like you're taking a leap of faith? And those that are afraid and the elements of being afraid and of being scared. I think this can be a very overwhelming topic because, like Zina said, something as small as deciding to join Interact at the age of 16 for Zina opened up so many opportunities for her. But I think that's also something that to others might add on to that fear. Well, you know FOMO. Do I
exactly
am I ready for this opportunity professional wise? You know, what if I'm right now not in the capacity to do that? Well, if I decline, is that going to affect my whole future? And I think it's a matter of everything, as cliche as it sounds, but everything that's meant for you will come your way when 100%. You're ready for it. When you're
ready for it. I totally believe that too.
And so, yes, you have to put yourself out there sometimes, but not beyond your comfort zone to a large extent, because you need to also have happiness. And I guess we'll go into that as well. But of course, it's important for us to test ourselves in our career and put ourselves out there and try new things. But if it, at the end of the day, is making you professionally happy, but it's impacting you in ways that personally aren't where you're heading, that needs to be something you take into consideration as
definitely agreed.
I actually have a question before I move on to what I already had in mind. Do you believe in the idea that this is probably going to touch on the concept of feminism a bit more, but do you believe that at any point in your journeys that you felt as women you had to experience more negative self-talk because of your gender and all of this taking on of brilliant, high-impact projects, and you're competing against men in these fields as well. Mm-hmm. So do you think that you had to face that? Did you have to face this narrative, this kind of rhetoric in your journey, and you had to fight it as young women, especially Zina at 16, for example, and you're growing older and getting more exposed to the world of Rotaract and what it takes to be in a leadership position at Rotaract. Even Sara, as editor-in-chief of the Phoenix Daily at 2021, that's amazing. And Annabelle as well, as secretary general. So do you believe in this divide, of this leadership gap that exists, this ambition as well, as women for these types of positions?
Who would like to start?
Go ahead, Annabelle.
Yeah, Annabelle.
All right. Honestly, I think that this is a very good question, and I think it's definitely meant to be asked. And personally, I was very lucky growing up. I was very lucky. I was an only girl in the family, and usually that's a recipe for not where I am right now, to be honest. But but I was very, very, very fortunate to be with the family that I was raised with, because they showed me that regardless of my gender, regardless of anything, my nationality, my religion, I am meant to do something special in this world. And I think that many girls, especially within our community, don't get that. They don't get that. As an education major, I study demographics a lot. And if you enter certain communities, you notice that especially women, they tend to lean to jobs such as teachers or nurses. And exactly. Not saying that mm-hmm. that is, when it's a personal choice, it's definitely beautiful. I'm in education as a personal choice. But once you see that mm-hmm. form of kind of, not oppression, but shaping people's lives, not regarding what they could be doing or the capabilities that they are capable of giving the world, you know, I think that that makes mm-hmm. a huge difference. And I personally, mm-hmm. in my workforce, yeah. I did face some problems, honestly, with men kind of underestimating my abilities or yes. men kind yes. of thinking that because of my gender, I would not be up to the task, or I might be, the sentence that has been thrown around so much is too emotional for a leadership position as mm-hmm. a woman. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I personally am the kind of person that when I'm faced with, honestly, I call this injustice. When I'm faced with injustice or some commentary like this, I always try to put myself in their position and see how they're thinking. I never let it get to me. And I hope that everyone listening to this will take my advice on this. Never let it get to you, because your words mean nothing compared to the actions and the results that you will get as a woman in power. Mm-hmm. That's what's going to shut everyone
Brilliant.
Up. It's not your words. Yeah.
That's Agreed. Amazing, Annabeth.
Agreed.
Agreed.
Agreed. Yeah. So, Rosina, do you want to add anything to that?
Well, in my sense, I believe in breaking the glass ceiling everywhere you go. Prove yourself in that sense. We've all been put in positions. Definitely. We've all been put in positions, whether it's in education or work or wherever we are, when we felt kind of discriminated against because we are women. As Annabelle mentioned, this emotion thing that they have around us is extremely downgrading. When I decided to go into law school and I found myself obsessed with criminal law and everything around criminal law, first thing I got from my surrounding, of course, not my family, but the bigger surrounding, in a sense that criminal law is dangerous for a woman. What do you mean you want to go into criminal law? You wouldn't be able to handle everything criminal law has to put on you. And this is where I plan to prove them wrong.
This you took is, it as a challenge.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Take mm-hmm. it as a Very challenge true. And prove it to yourself and to the world. There are a lot of women out there that are taking these steps and giving women these the power, you know, the power that you can be whoever you want to be, and don't let anyone mm-hmm. discriminate against you. As for the men and women in workplaces, there are going to be a lot of places where you're going to face discrimination in that sense. But mm-hmm. surround yourself, if you're able to, surround yourself with a community that pushes you forward. Rotter Act,
beautiful.
You mentioned Rotter Act. Rotter Act is a community that never discriminates in any sense of way. And I think they played a huge role in forming my power in that sense and kind of teaching me how to actually go into the world and face anyone mm. that comes to me with this. So mm-hmm. surround yourself with such people and be powerful enough. Get yourself a bit more powerful. Stand on your feet and Beautiful. Say that, you know what? I am going to prove you wrong.
Totally.
I'm smiling so hard. I'm so happy that I'm part of this conversation, because it's so important to me, and I'm forcing my sister to listen to this when it comes out. Sara, before we jump into the next topic, do you want to say anything? Go ahead.
I think I haven't had any experience, to be fair with you, and I think that's important to acknowledge. I have mm-hmm. not had any experience feeling as if I was ever undermined due to my gender. But I will admit that a big part of that is on me, because from a very young age, I said, you know what, no one is ever going to tell me I'm not qualified enough, because I'm going to make sure I am overqualified. No one is you ever going to tell me. Yes. No one is ever going to tell me that this isn't on my table, because I'll put it on my table. And in this sense, I never really had, fortunately enough, I never really had anyone tell me, no, you can't do this because of your gender. But I do know that had I not been this type of person that made sure I was overqualified for every internship I applied to, every mm-hmm. opportunity mm-hmm. I stepped into,
It's because you took control of the narrative. Exactly. It's like you reversed it and you made it play out in your favor.
But I do think that where the discrimination sometimes falls in, and I now as a 21-year-old, I think I'm still going to be facing this for a few years, is mm-hmm. the age. Is the age element. And I don't know if Annabelle and Zina, or perhaps yourself, Heya, you feel this.
Totally agree.
But it's not the fact that I'm a female editor-in-chief. It's that I'm a young editor-in-chief. It's not the fact that I am a female researcher, it's that I'm a young researcher. It's the fact that I've had so much experience in such little time. That's where I get the discrimination, I would say. That's where sometimes people get intimidated. And I think this is a natural thing. But I also think if you're doing the research, if you're taking on these positions for the right reasons, that discrimination, you can break it real fast, because you tell them, I'm here for the right reasons. I'm here to make this position better, to do this job better, to do it right. And everyone will appreciate that at the end of the day, whether you're female, young, old, teenager, 20-year-old, whatever you are.
I love that. Agreed. I love that. I think that if we keep talking about this specific topic, we're going to like waste the whole episode on it. We need one whole episode for it alone. So I'm going to jump right into the next thing that I wanted to discuss with you all. So, you know, Instagram or social media in general, it tends to glamorize and romanticize our lives in ways that we control what people see and what we, مثلا, if I'm having a mental breakdown, obviously I'm not going to turn on my phone, record a story and show people that I'm crying and that I'm not in a good mental state right now because I'm overwhelmed and I'm stressed out and I don't know what to do. And then it's just like all of these problems are piling up and I have deadlines coming up. So obviously I would expect that all three of you have had to deal with that at one point or another, that you didn't feel like your mental health was in check all the time, that you had, that you felt like you had to take back control of your life. So can you shed some light on how that is and knowing when enough is enough, knowing that, okay, I would love to take this project on, I would love to take this initiative on, but I don't have the time or I don't have the resources anymore. So yeah, go ahead. Zeno? Oh, Annabelle.
Whatever you prefer.
Go ahead. I thought it was Zena.
I think, honestly, this topic in general really hits close to home. Because Azina and Sara have both been witness to that. But I recently faced a very similar situation in the last semester where I was not at all myself. My mental health had reached the depths that I could have never imagined it reaching before. And a lot of people don't see that because I'm not going to publicize that on my social media. I'm not going to, you know, I would definitely talk to people about it and tell them that it's okay because it is okay. I'm okay. You know, I'm fine now. I came out of it because I have fantastic people around me and because I noticed that when enough is enough, it doesn't matter how many opportunities come your way. It doesn't matter how many doors open for you. And I've personally been very fortunate, particularly this year, to be very productive during the coronavirus pandemic, which a lot of people were not, you know what I mean? That's okay because this is a pandemic. People deserve to feel the way that they feel. I was just very fortunate that I got most of the things that I've been hoping my whole academic career to get. I did. They opened this year. But at the same time, I was completely overwhelmed towards the end because I didn't know when to stop saying yes. And
that's what I wanted to get at.
I didn't know when to stop saying yes. Yeah. And honestly, I learned from it. I'm glad that I went through this experience because maybe if I didn't, I would have never learned when to stop saying yes. And right now, you're talking to people who are 20, 21 years old, but these people, like us and the people listening to us, are going to grow into people in the workforce, influential, hopefully adults. Yes.
Exactly.
And we need to know when to say no. We need to know when to prioritize our mental health because without our mental health, we won't be able to do good in the opportunities that come our way. So that's not the only thing
100%.
For sure.
I think in terms of that, this is a conversation that we've had before within the Bayman community, if you will, both as SG and DG, but also amongst our other members and secretariat, which is we are entitled to choose what is enough on our own plate, right? And this is where when we were choosing the team, the secretariat for Bayman, and we were going through applications, a lot of people had a lot on their plate, but they were still applying to these positions. And we had to really sit and think, that's not a choice for me as DG or for Annabelle as SG to say, I think this person has enough on their plate. But at the same time, we do have to watch out for, of course, people's mental health because we are somewhat responsible for this conference as a whole, of course, and for them as being part of our team. And I think it's also a matter of that's a responsibility that you learn as an individual over time, like Annabelle kind of outlined.
Yeah.
And for me, it's been something that I've definitely struggled with here and there. But at the same time, it's been something that I've somehow found a balance in, because I do take on a lot of projects and I do put myself out there a lot, but I'm not mm-hmm. afraid to say, look, I can't do this. I can't give this my all. But you know yeah. what? I can help you find someone that can. And once I go through that process, I already feel like I'm part of that project because I put them in contact. Beautiful. And then it doesn't feel like a letdown to me personally.
That is exactly.
You know, like, no, yeah. you know what? I didn't let this project down.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the ways I've coped with it. But at the same time, it's been a pandemic, like Annabelle said. There's going to be times when you're thinking, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Really, what am I doing? And that's exactly. more than okay.
And where and are
think
we heading?
We've all had yes. those times.
Exactly.
And where are we heading?
I couldn't agree
know?
More, Zina.
Yeah.
I've definitely had that self-doubt during the pandemic. Yeah, go ahead, Zina.
Yeah. Well, let me start off by saying it's only normal to have a breakdown when you have so many projects on your plate. Like, I think yes. my family mm-hmm. just looks at me at sometimes and go like, this is normal. It's fine. Just give her a tissue and yeah. she'll be fine. Because at some point when you hold on a lot of projects, there are some days where everything goes smoothly. And there are other days mm-hmm. where you feel like everything is just happening at the same second and you have to just kind of balance everything out. And this is where you go into smash down, breakdown. And it's fine as long as you actually plan during this breakdown. How are you going to solve this and how are you going to balance
yes.
your life from now on, from this second on? So I have A, B, C, D on my plate. What is my priority right now? Where is it, deadline wise, importance wise, everything? And I think with every challenge that you get, I'm not going to use breakdown as a word anymore because it's not also too healthy to break down 24/7 but every single challenge that you have kind of teaches you a bit more about balance and how you can have it. And this is a very personal
very
issue
true.
This is a very personal yeah. issue because some people may handle stuff in a way where others this would be impossible for them, you know. So mm-hmm. this is not mm-hmm. something people can impose on you in a way like, listen, I have this, if you follow it you'll be fine. No, this is something you between you and yourself will get to know by time, but you need to go through these challenges. You need to go through them. And one more thing I want to add to that, Sarah touched upon it.
Yeah.
The fact that once I learned to say no, I also learned how to delegate.
Yeah.
And I also learned how to get people included. Be inclusive of your surrounding. We all know people we all know people that want to be part of a project, but they just need a bit of a push, you
for
know,
sure.
or they want to have an impact, but they need assurance in a sense. So once you know for a fact that you are not able to handle this, first thing I try to do is think of, but who would be able?
Yes.
And suddenly I find myself changing these people's lives in such a minor way, but to them it may be very significant.
And this is what makes you a leader. So. You know what I mean? I think this is why we reach the positions that me and Sarah have had conversations about this, but we reach the positions where we are in my opinion, because we are not aiming for personal success, but the success of our community. You know, if we want to grow
amazing.
For sure, but what is growth if the whole community is not growing with you? So this is
that's
so
very
important.
True. And this is where Annabelle and I have said so many times, well, I've told Annabelle, can you do this on your own? Annabelle will tell me yes. And I'll say, but can you delegate this? And Annabelle will tell me yes, or vice versa. Annabelle will ask me these questions. Does the task get done? And does someone actually gain an opportunity in the process?
Yeah.
Well, then isn't this the best option, the best path to
of
go
course.
Down?
Of course, definitely.
I love that. Actually, since you all brought up the idea of what it takes to be a leader, can you actually shed some more light on what you think are the finer qualities, the best qualities that a leader should have other than delegation? Because that's something that I've personally struggled with. Like, I don't feel like I get the task done unless I do it myself. And that's a problem that I've trying to get over.
I feel you.
Because, you know, as a leader of like three different teams, I need to find a way to balance my time for all three and give my attention fairly for all three. And I can't do that if I'm going to assume all the tasks and just also make an assumption that the people who I'm delegating to won't be able to do the work. So how would you think, leaders our age, younger than us, older than us by a little bit, can manage without?
I think honestly the best way to do that is, first of all, and I'm going to use being SG of Bayman as an example, All right. We have a team, alhamdulillah and smallah. We have a team of over 80 people. Like, I think it's actually over 100 people at this point, all behind the scenes working for this conference journey to be as intellectual and prosperous as possible. And the way that I saw it from the very beginning, from my interview with you, Haya, from my interview with Sara, from everyone joining on this team, you know what I mean? Everyone has such a beautiful potential, such a beautiful potential that is so unique, you know? And you being a leader, in my opinion, is recognizing potential where you see it, recognizing the downfalls of
definitely
recognizing recognizing the downfalls as well. You can notice people's weak points, make them stronger in that sense. You notice people's strengths, make them powerful in that sense. You know, I really, really stress whenever I think of leader, it's not just someone giving tasks or leading the march through whatever journey you're on, but it's someone that notices the weakest link, because you are always as strong as your weakest link, and always pushes this person and these people in general to reach the absolute full potential that they can. That's a leader to me.
Definitely.
I agree. And I think it's also, to add to that, you need a team who you lead. But I think it's also very important, and this is what's been significant for me in my experiences, is don't get a team where you're too like-minded. Don't get a team where every time you tell them,
you want a devil's advocate.
You don't want to tell them, guys, let's do this. And everyone's just nodding their head. Amazing. Thank you, team leader. No, you want someone within the team that says,
that's not a yes man.
Exactly. Yes. You know, and you need that. You need to have someone that's not afraid to challenge you on your team, if not a whole team that's not afraid to challenge you. But challenge you in what? In the pursuit of the goal that you have set as a leader.
Yeah, definitely.
So you set a goal as a leader. You set, where are we heading as a team? How we get there? The path there? Well, that's a team effort.
Yeah.
But I know that we're heading there. And I think that's the most beautiful part of being a leader.
Definitely.
And it's also recognizing that you're never the smartest person in this staff, that there's always going to be someone
if
who knows
you
more,
are,
who's more experienced than you.
Definitely. If you are the smartest person in the room, honestly, you are in the wrong room. This is, I live by this.
100%.
Wow. I live by this.
Wow.
I live by this. And let me comment a bit on the fact on how to lead, because this is something that has taken me a lot. And a lot of times, a lot of situations I've been put with that actually taught me the hard way more than the easy way about how to lead. And the first one that I would say, other than inclusiveness, other than charisma, other than the ones that we're used to actually hearing, sometimes I feel we forget to be a bit vulnerable. This is something this is something very,
very
important,
true.
You know, like we all look at leadership as a powerful position, which is honestly, it's a powerful position, but lead from the ground. I live by this. I don't you ever lead from a position that is actually allocating stuff to people and telling them what to do.
Definitely.
Look at how they do it and tell them how to improve it, and let it be vice versa. Let them tell you how to, you can improve your leadership in a sense. And this forms a kind of honesty and a kind of relationship that you have with the people working around you that actually makes work so much easier and so much more fun in general.
Totally agree.
So I feel like beside being charismatic, smart, and everything that the characteristics that we've been taught as children that leaders have, let us try to be empathetic, let us try to be inclusive, and let us try to be, in a sense, leading from the ground. And human.
We're leaders, but we're
definitely
human.
And I've
seen this so much, because of course, aside of, like Annabelle said, leading Bayman, which is a team of over 100 people by now, also leading the Phoenix Daily from the ground up, I've really come to understand that a boss culture in any setting is detrimental to the culture in itself. I've told this to every single person we've worked with. I have one thing that I will boss you about, and that's that you will not inflict a boss culture on this organization, on any organization I step into. Because the moment you feel as though I'm doing this task because I've been tasked to do it in a boss culture, you're no longer doing it because you see that goal at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Which is the whole point. You're doing it because the person above the tunnel threw it on your head. And you're supposed to be doing what you're doing because you want to reach that common goal as a unity, as an entity. And that's how you need to work hand in hand, side by side, not top down, up
down,
any of that.
Yeah. And having an honest approach between each other, like while leading the PSPA Society, Sara knows this. Mm-hmm. After each event we have a session afterwards where there's the team and we are freely talking to each other about mm-hmm. what each and every one of us could have done better for next time. How can mm-hmm. we improve Definitely. In that sense? And the fact that there's no positions in this, there's no leader, there's no president, there's no nothing. There's just humans talking to each other in a sense that you are great here, but I think if we did that in this sense, you would have felt
yeah it's devotion and to the it cause
also gave us exactly
but and, at the end of the day as a member of the PSPA society, as a cabinet member, I will always, regardless, because of the way that Zina has made those sessions as president, I will always respect Zina as the president of that cabinet because of the way she leads. Mm-hmm. Whereas that respect might not have been there if she hadn't put herself down on our level, of so course. To speak. And I think that's what puts her up
there
as
president. She hadn't recognized that she was someone like who could do no Definitely. Wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, mm-hmm. she admitted to herself and to her team that, you know, I make mistakes. Yeah. I'm mm-hmm. as human as you are. Let's talk about it. And that yeah. is so important.
You even see that. You even see that in Bayman very much, like with our town hall meetings, mm-hmm. how we're always striving on this yeah. interdisciplinariness that we want to create because mm-hmm. we notice and we recognize in particular that the more perspectives, mm-hmm. the more eyes you have on a certain project, the greater it's going to be. And look at this. Look at how, look yeah. at where we are. We're doing a no podcast. Doubt. We're doing a podcast.
You see? Exactly. Like,
genuinely, this is the best form of leadership, in my opinion, when everyone is involved and they feel yeah. relevant within the process.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. Definitely. I love where this conversation has taken us. We started out with talking about balancing work and social life. We ended up talking about what it takes to be a leader, and that's amazing. So before we wrap up, do any of you have any final words you want to leave our audience with about this balance, this important balance, how to find it, and if you lose it, how to get it back?
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. I think... I'm just going to start this off. I think that the best way for you to always balance your life out is to always prioritize. The importance of prioritizing mm-hmm. what you have on your plate along with your social life. Personally, I love my social life. I love going out with my friends. I love, you know, going to different places. That's my escape from my professional mm-hmm. life, you know, because at one point it does get tedious. Mm-hmm. You can't just live 24/7 in front of your computer. That's when your mental yeah. health goes yeah. down, you yeah. know. And that's what I did. That's what happened to me. So once I sat down and I actually grabbed a pen and paper, and I genuinely, properly, and literally wrote down what's important in my life. The positions I hold, the people in my life, what I am happy doing, you know? And that's how I was able mm-hmm. to pick myself back up, because I noticed these are the things I need to be focusing on. This is what I say mm-hmm. yes to.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, Annabelle. I love that sentence. Mm-hmm. This is what I say yes to. Definitely.
Yeah.
So, Zina, do you want to say anything as well?
I think for me, it's a matter of knowing what makes me happy. So if I'm going through a few months where I am finding myself getting up late, getting up because I have a meeting, not because I want to get to work, or if I find myself, you know, feeling like I'm just doing administrative things, I'm just getting by, I have to sit down and reevaluate. Well, what am I doing? Why is this no longer making me as happy as it used to? Mm-hmm. What are the factors influencing it, and why? And I think that's
and when did it stop?
Mm-hmm. And when did it stop? Like, what happened?
Yeah.
And I think this is something you'll go through in phases, up, down, weekly, daily, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. But I think it's very important to have someone with you, anyone, whether it's in your workplace yeah. or if it's at home or if it's at Bayman or whatever it is that you kind of let in on your secret of your professional life, because it's good to mm-hmm. have. It's good to have a second pair of eyes on your professional life that can feel, Sara, you seem to find this a little bit mundane these days. It's all good. Whereas sometimes that can take you 3 weeks to figure out. And those 3 weeks, it's too late. You've kind of already affected your own mental health.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. I think having that second pair of eyes, be it your mom, a coworker, anyone But you can check into...
They see the big picture.
They see the bigger picture, yeah.
And they see you in that picture. Exactly. And let me add on to that. Definitely. Is never, ever disregard your social life as something less important. You have no idea how much your social life affects your professional 100%. One in a sense. You have to surround yourself with people who are supportive of what you're doing, who you feel happy with. Because at the end of the day, when... As Sara said, sometimes work gets too much, you know? Mm-hmm. So once that work comes too much, you want to go and spend your time with people that are actually going to take your mind off things and actually going to be there for you and stand up for you and push you, push you further in your goals and in your life, in a sense, instead of actually going somewhere where you don't belong and you don't feel like you can actually grow because this would affect you so much and it'll affect your work without you noticing it. So I'm going to end up by saying that take care of your social life at the same importance as you take care of your professional life and surround yourself in both
100%.
In both lives. Surround yourself, be very picky with who you surround yourself with in both lives in terms of people that support you, love you and want the best for you. And then again 100%. And then again, do not limit yourself. Do not limit it. Put yourself out there, be have this courage, because in a time where we're in a pandemic and nothing is so stable, I think it's time we find beauty in chaos.
Definitely.
For sure. And
I think one thing as well that Zina mentioned is to be picky. It's and not just with your friends and your surroundings, but also with what you say yes to. You know, many opportunities come your way, but we were very fortunate, us four of us, to be in an environment where we really do support each other within our work as well, you know? This is a rare occurrence. So usually a lot of people don't consider the whole aspect of bringing people up for the greater good of both individually and the entity. And I think that this is the most important thing to
Couldn't agree more.
Pick your environment.
Definitely.
And I think I love that. On that note, like Zina and Annabelle both said, if you've picked the right people in your life that support you and are there for you, the moment one of them is that bird's eye view and tells you, you know, Annabelle or Zina or Haya, whoever it may be, I think you're overworking yourself. You know that's coming from a place of love, not someone that's trying to put you down, not someone that's trying to be a bump in your road. You know that's someone that's pointing that out because they're supporting you, because they want you to do better. And when you have that network, you're only on to greater things. And it will take time. Definitely. Don't stress yourself to face that network. It will take time.
Amazing.
Definitely.
I'm so grateful to be part of this conversation. Once again, I say it and I will never stop saying it. I'm glad that our audience members get the chance to hear from you three and from the experiences that you've had. Obviously, all of this advice doesn't come from a place of lack of experience, but from a place where you've met so many people, you've been part of so many projects, and it's justified. So thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode. And dear audience, we're going to, release a third one next week. So stay tuned. We'd love to hear from you. So follow us on Instagram at Bayman Conference and follow Zina, Annabelle and Sara as well. They have a lot to say. And most of the time, if not all the time, it's amazing advice. And it's really brilliant. And I look up to you three. So thank you so much for joining me.
It was such a pleasure. Thank you guys, it's been a pleasure.
See you at Bayman 21.
See you at Bayman 21.
I was waiting for that one.
Venus catchphrase.
Exactly.
See you.
Bye guys.
Bye.